When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Mando I know of is on Tatooine.
I've spent much time on Tatooine. I've never seen a Mandalorian there.
My information is good, I tell you. The city of Mos Pelgo, I swear it by the Gotra.
Tatooine it is, then.
Wait! Mando! You can't leave me like this! Cut me down!
That wasn't part of the deal.
Wait, what are you doing? Mando! I can pay! Mando! Mando!
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Richard.
And I'm Chris.
And this is House Podcastica. This week, we're covering The Mandalorian Season 2, Episode 1, Chapter 9, The Marshal. It's back!
It is back, and it's Chapter 9. It's not Chapter 1 of Season 2. I like the continuation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Legion did that, too. It just kept on going with the chapters. It's like one big story.
Well, that's cool. I mean, that's what we want, right? One big story.
Yeah. Like, have to. By the time it's over, it'll be like a 97-hour movie.
Right, and I'll sit down and watch it all in one go.
Oh, Star Wars all the time.
I did sit down and watch the first eight again. I mean, over a day, a single day. I watched them at 1.5 speed so I could get through, but it was kind of fun to go back and watch them all again.
Yeah. How long were they? They were less than an hour, right?
I can't
remember how long they were, yeah. Because this episode was pretty long.
I think this was the longest one of all of them. I think they were typically like 30 to 45 minutes, somewhere in there.
I think that's true. And they were saying online that this was a bit of a expanded episode, just, I think, to celebrate being back.
So you don't think the whole season's going to be longer episodes?
No, I think we're looking at probably 40-minute episodes for the most part.
Uh-huh. I mean, this is the first episode, believe it or not, that Jon Favreau actually directed.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Really? I didn't realize that. He wrote some of the others in season one, right?
I think he wrote six of the eight, but he didn't have time to direct, so he directed this one. I don't know if he'll direct more, but that was pretty cool that he got
to direct
one.
I guess back then he was busy with this little Avengers thing that was going on.
Yeah, he's a busy guy. Well, I want to welcome back everybody. Glad to be covering this show again. It's another eight episode season with episodes airing each Friday, and we'll try to have a podcast out every Sunday morning for you guys. I just wanted to touch on a couple things before we get into the premiere here. Are you guys excited about the season, and is there anything in particular you're hoping for?
I'm hoping to see some of that dark saber action. That's pretty much number one on my list. Other than that, you know, I'm open. Let's see where the show's gonna take us.
You know, that's a good point. I actually didn't go back and watch season one just before we were doing this, but I did watch the recap, of course, the 2 minutes that they did before this episode. And the Darksaber is there, and it sort of reminded me that it was a thing and that we've got Giancarlo Esposito to deal with in this season, I think. And so I'm looking forward to him for sure. He's great. I love that guy in almost anything.
Yeah. What do you want to see, Rich? You want to see it slicing through some people, beheading some people?
Yeah. I don't know, a little bit of me wants to see a Jedi.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Just want to want to get some of that in there. If the Darksaber is the closest we get to that, I'll take it.
I mean, Mandalorian kind of got his marching orders at the end of last season by the Mandalorian armor. You need to take this child and find its species. So that's his new mission. And, you know, as they said, it's like, so I'm supposed to find this race of enemy sorcerers and take it to them. And so I think it feels like a meeting with the Jedi is in the cards at some point in the show. I don't know this season or what, but you know, at some point. And last season I was saying I thought it was cool that this Star Wars thing didn't have Jedi, because Jedi are great, but they're in everything. So it was kind of fun to explore other things. But I'm at a point now where I think it would be, I mean, as long as the series doesn't just become all about the Jedi, I think it would be pretty cool to get some Jedi action in there.
Yeah.
I think so too. I think so. Like, I thought it was cool to not have Jedi in the first season of this show. If they bring them in some sort of side role that doesn't overtake what the Mandalorian is doing and his missions and things like that, then I'll be fine with it. But like you said, Jason, I don't want it to become all Jedi all the time.
Yeah. One Jedi focused episode would be awesome.
For sure. Yeah. Just, I mean, they've been everything else I've seen with Star Wars. And granted, there's video games and books that I haven't played and read. So there's probably other stuff out there that isn't totally Jedi focused, but all the main stuff is really about Jedi, and that's cool. But I want this to be about Mando and what he's doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's one reason why it's successful, because Jon Favreau's like, I like Westerns. So I'm going to do that instead of doing what everybody else did and just try to copy earlier Star Wars. You know, that's kind of fun. So last season we had a Star Wars question at the beginning of this episode. I'm going to try to do that again this season. First question, what do you guys think of the special edition changes that George Lucas has done over the years to the original Star Wars trilogy?
Ooh, you mean like Han shot first kind of thing?
Yeah. I mean, they did that. They also added a lot of CG creatures. And they put Jabba the Hutt in there. They even put Boba Fett in Star Wars. I think you see him skulking around in the background or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I watched A New Hope actually not too long ago. And it was kind of, actually the CGI wasn't that good. It looks kind of corny now with the standards that we have today. But you know what? I did. I liked it. I like that kind of stuff. You know, I like big flashy movies with lots of CGI in them. So I was fine with it. It didn't really seem to change the story too much for me. I know there's some hardcore guys out there that were like, this is stupid. Don't touch a masterpiece, you know?
I would say fundamentally, I'm not against the idea of adding things in a special edition, changing effects and stuff like that. But don't mess around with the story you told. And I think some of the things that George Lucas did affect that. I mean, Han shooting first, it changes Han's character a little bit. And that's what people don't like about it.
Han not shooting first.
Sorry, Han not shooting first. Right. You know, that kind of thing annoys me. That's probably the single biggest problem with the special editions. I think most people agree. But adding, you know, all the extra CG characters in like Jabba's palace and stuff, I find they almost look a little out of place in context with the rest of the effects in the movie. So they're a bit distracting, but the idea of it doesn't really bother me. He's just trying to flesh out the world a little bit and give us more sort of party atmosphere in there. Right.
Yeah.
So I don't mind that, but it's, if he changes the story or he changes the characters too much, that's where it becomes problematic for me.
Yeah, like I'm not a black or white on it either. I mean, I'm mostly a no, but when the X-Wing squadron is heading towards the Death Star at the end, the red stripe along the side is more vivid. And I think they added a few more X-Wing fighters in there and the engines look cooler. And, you know, when they do it and it adds just more visual flair that looks cool. I love it. But even the idea of putting the extra creatures in seems like a good idea, but adding the digital ones right next to the practical effects, it takes me out of it because they look so different, you know, and it stands out. Mm-hmm. So I don't like that. And then also he did busy it up a bit much, like sometimes less is more as the Mandalorian shows. And so when you add a whole bunch of stuff going on around the fringes of the scene, it kind of takes away from it. So when it works well, it's cool, but I definitely like hand shot first. So that sucked big, balls, I thought.
Huge.
Yeah. But and then the young Anakin Force Ghost at the end of Jedi. I didn't like that because he's standing right next to Ben Kenobi. Why don't they have young Ben? It just didn't make any sense. And Luke's never seen this guy. So I don't know. That changed the story a little bit too. So I think when they do it subtly, just the same way when you do any visual effects and it's subtle enough that sometimes you don't even notice it, but it makes the scene better. I like that. But when they add things that take you out of the movie, then I didn't like it so much. And I thought a lot of it was more like that.
I you're right. A lot of it does take you out of it a bit. I wonder though, had they, with some of the CG characters, had they done them with actual practical stuff, people in suits and costumes, would it have bothered you the same way?
Maybe
because it might have fit in better with what was already on screen, right?
Right.
I don't know.
I remember George saying that the reason he did it was it meshed with what he originally wanted to do. He wanted to have a busy universe with lots of, you know, business going on, and he just couldn't do that in 77 when he made the film.
Yeah.
But, you know, they did add a couple of scenes that expanded, too, on the story, like the scene where Han Solo in Mos Eisley met up with Jabba the Hutt and was walking around him, you know, and walked on his tail and put that stupid look on his face.
Silly.
So that's what I'm thinking of when I think of expansions.
I mean, you mentioned, you know, George Lucas said he made it more like he originally wanted it. Sometimes limitations are better. And I think George Lucas actually functioned better when he had those limitations, because in the prequels, when he could just digitize anything he wanted, I don't think it worked out so well for him. So I don't know.
Yeah. Necessity, the mother of invention.
I did also want to mention one more thing. If you guys listening want to get a refresher on some context for the Mandalorian, like an explanation of what a Mandalorian is and when the series takes place and why we decided to cover it, if you go back and check out our episode of this podcast on the first episode of The Mandalorian, we go into a lot of that. So you might want to revisit that. But now let's get into our top three highlights for The Mandalorian Chapter 9, The Marshal. So what did you guys think in general?
In general, I really liked this episode. I thought it was a ton of fun. There was great action. It was fun to see the Mandalorian use the jetpack a bunch because you know, he just got the jetpack at the end of season one. And to have two of them flying around was, or maybe one and a half flying around was pretty cool. It felt like a really nice sort of ease us back into the world of the Mandalorian. It wasn't, you know, there wasn't too much of the greater overall storyline in this. It was kind of a monster of the week kind of thing, but, you know, it starts off with a reminder of what his current or new mission is. And then to get to where he's going or to take the first steps along that path, he has to go and deal with this other thing, which I really liked. So I thought it was great. I really enjoyed this first one of season two.
Yeah. And, you know, we always see the Mandalorian, the jetpack and the rocket, but they never, like Boba Fett didn't really use it that much, maybe just for a second here and there. But I wasn't always sure whether it would look cool for them to actually use it. Like, it sounds like, would that be cool? But the way they did it this time, it looked awesome. The way they were flying around and how they landed and everything, I thought it looked really cool.
Yeah, especially when they land.
Well, I thought taking off looked cooler than landing. I think there was one time when they landed where it really looked like it was a couple of guys on harnesses and they sort of bounced onto the ground. But you know what? It didn't really bother me that much. You know, when they were up on the hilt, the mountain with the great dragon, and it was about to like get them and they fly off to that the side, cool. That looked really cool. Yeah.
Rich, what about you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. This is a great episode. At first, you know, when I realized, hey, it's time. Woo! We were texting, and I was at work, and I'm like, yeah, I've got something to do tonight. I was thinking, yeah, Darksaber, Moff Gideon, Baby Yoda. But yeah, like you said, Chris, really none of that was in it. You know, not even Baby Yoda was a big part of this particular episode. He was just, you know, his job was to be super cute behind Mando the whole time
and react to everything.
Yeah, but there is something really, I don't know, beautiful and in the simplicity of the story, you know, it played out almost like a movie.
Yeah, it made me really happy that Baby Yoda didn't play a huge part in this, because there were plenty of moments where I feel like he could have closed his eyes and reached out his arm and helped them out. But instead, He was just kind of in the background, letting them do their thing. And we didn't need that in this episode. We didn't need Baby Yoda to save the day already, you know?
Yeah, and that you know what got me is I'm sitting down on the couch, excited to start the show, and there's something about, I think we talked about this last year, something about how he moves, you know, with that opening scene, and he's just walking out of the shadows into the light, like an Old West gunslinger. I mean, that was fantastic. Just that super simple that opening scene.
I know.
Got me even more excited, like him walking with the little Yoda, keeping up behind him. It's like just let the badassness soak in with this odd couple, you know?
I know.
And the armor's so shiny now, the way the light glints off it. Cool. I loved it, too.
Yeah, I was like, this is going to be good.
Yeah, it was cool, too, because it was at night and there were just these spotlights, but not, you know, just like really tiny spots of light on the ground. And they kind of just walked into one. And that's one thing I love about it, like about the show is... it's about moments, and there's the dialogue is sparse. They let the visuals and the movements and the moments do the work, and it works really well. And you were mentioning about how this was sort of its own little story, like a movie. And that's what we discovered last season, that this is kind of a throwback to like 80s TV, where you have this like the Kung Fu show that was 70s, I guess, but wandering around getting in adventures. And each week was the adventure of the week. And there is the overarching story, but it's kind of fun to kind of revisit this type of television where he sort of get distracted, or the Incredible Hulk, you know, Bruce Banner would be wandering around meeting different people each week and stuff. All right, let's get into our top three. Chris, you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. And it's funny because I wanted to talk a little bit about the little moments in this episode, which we've already kind of started. But I think the show does such a good job with that stuff. And it would be so easy for them to just jump right to all the action and skip over all of the kind of things that get us to those scenes, right? You guys were talking about him walking in at the beginning. It looked amazing. But like even riding the speeder bikes and getting from one place to where they're going, it helped me feel like some time was passing, you know, and we kind of get speeder bike montage. And then he spends the night around a campfire, you know, with some sand people. And then as he's riding into that city, Mos Pelgo, like they take it slow, you know, he comes in like this mysterious stranger on a speeder bike instead of a horse, and everybody's out watching him. And you really get this amazing feeling of kind of uncertainty, but also, you know, he's such a badass that everything is going to go his way. But you get also a feeling for the state of all the people around in this town, you know, wondering who he is and kind of what their life is like. And that happens a few times in the episode. So it's not just all about the big action, which is done really well and great, but these little things that amp up the mood and the Western feeling and all that other kind of stuff that they don't throw away, they include, and they do it really well. And I think it's just a testament to this show.
On that note, too, that when he's riding, like you said, into the town on a speeder bike, that speeder bike was totally set up like a chopper. So he kind of sat back a little bit, had his arms out front, made him look even more badass riding it.
Yeah. And like, I love that. It expands it a little bit. You know, it's not just about the Mandalorian going and killing a Krayt dragon or trying to take the armor off. What's his face? Cobb Vanth. You know, it's about him getting to where he's going and the sort of process he takes to get there. And I really like that about this show.
Yeah, you feel like you're on the journey with him, huh?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And it really does take its cues from like spaghetti westerns where you'd see Clint Eastwood just walk out into the middle of the street and hear, and it's all about the moment, you know?
Right, but if you'd told me that before I'd seen any of this, I would have thought... a travel montage with a Mandalorian, you know, going across the desert with two music, even, is that really going to work? And amazingly it does, you know?
Yeah. They even had a quick draw gunfight about to happen.
Yeah.
About to. Yeah.
Which I thought, well, Cobb Vanth, you might want to put the helmet back on. It's not really fair. Like when Mandalorian gets in a fight and people are beat, like punching his armor, I'm like, that would hurt.
Yeah. Like in the first fight he was in, that guy, that was awesome. He like used his helmet to like meet the guy with his man. Well, idiot, who's gonna punch somebody in a Beskin armor helmet?
I mean, he takes a punch in the face and he rear headbutts the guy behind him. It's amazing. Reverse headbutts, I guess.
That was great.
Rich, what's your number three?
Well, obviously, the entire crate dragon fight I was super happy about because I love monster movies to begin with, right?
It was like Godzilla.
Yeah, it was like Godzilla. You had a little bit of Moby Dick in there, a little bit of The Hobbit. I kept thinking of Smaug, and then a little bit of Tremors, of course, you know, with the whole sand monster
like
thing.
Like Ultra Tremors.
Love all those movies. So I was like totally into this. They're all attention getters. And I like, I like how they had to blend with the Tusken Raiders, the enemies, so they had to work together, the village, and problem solve to take out this gigantic creature. I liked how they worked that into the sequence because we got to know a little bit more about the Tusken Raiders, who have always been in the background in these movies, you know. And in the end, when all else fails, Mando's like, "I'm gonna blow this bitch up from the inside." Gets swallowed.
It's almost like a fable, like Jonah in the belly of the whale or something.
Yeah. The writers and the showrunners keep it at just the right pace too. It's like any slower, I think, and it would have been kind of boring.
Yeah.
You know, any faster and, you know, it would have been forgetful. So they just nail it every time. It was great.
Bodhi, like, he loves The Mandalorian, and, you know, he started watching it last season when he was only two, and he's like, "I'm a Mandalorian." And now, like, he's seen all of them like 10 times at least or more. And now a new one finally comes out. And I was wondering if he would like it because there was a lot of talking, but he just sat there transfixed the whole time.
That's cool.
It's very cool. You know, have you guys, I can think of three things I've watched fairly recently, including this, where, and I don't want to give anything away about these other ones, I guess I won't even mention them, but something was blown up from the inside. And it seems to be a theme lately. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I have seen a few of those, yeah.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Okay, my number three, just some of the cool moments, and feel free to jump in because I'm kind of jumping around a little bit. But as you mentioned, Rich, I like that first shot. Walking, just them two walking. And then I liked that it was this seedy industrial area because I like when Star Wars goes into more populated areas like that, that are kind of like the underbelly of society.
Yeah.
And there's creatures growling in the shadows and the walls are covered in graffiti. And there's one graffiti, it shows this stunned protocol droid like C-3PO. And then there's a snowtrooper next to it with a red line through its face. And Baby Yoda's looking around all worried, like, what are you bringing me here for? When he shoots his grappling cable at Gore Koresh, this guy that double-crossed him in the fighting arena, and then hangs him upside down with it, were you guys thinking about Batman?
Oh, now I am, yeah.
I was. At the time. I was like, he's such a Batman sometimes. That was cool.
What I was thinking in that scene is there were so many of whatever those creatures with the red eyes were. I'm like,
yeah,
that seems like an awfully dangerous place to live if there's that many of them around.
Yeah,
right.
Well, apparently they don't like light.
Ah.
So all Mando had to do was shoot out the light and they converged on that guy.
Right.
Yeah. And when Mando said, "I promise you will not die by my hand," I'm thinking this guy's dead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was kind of lawyery the way you stated mm-hmm. that. When that guy said there was another Mandalorian on Tatooine, I was thinking, oh, that's probably Boba Fett. So it was kind of a nice sort of misdirection because it was Boba Fett's armor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, I just love the old West feel of the Tatooine stuff. The look of it, how it's all dusty, which makes sense because it's a sand planet. And Mos Pelga, which I don't think we'd heard of before. It's this tired old West town with suspicious town folk, but with the Tatooine architecture. Those two just marry really well together, I thought.
Yeah.
And everyone's wearing tan, so it's like all the same color.
Yeah, and the shot of Mando flying his ship to Tatooine with the music, that was cool. I really enjoyed the music of that scene.
The music in this whole episode was spot on, I thought.
Yeah.
It's even better than last season. I think it's really cool that Tim Oliphant, I mean, he's playing the sheriff again like he did in Deadwood, but it's a good part for him. Just fits it really well.
Did you like his performance? I was a little bit on the fence, honestly. I thought he was smiling too much.
Yeah,
he was
like
too pretty.
Too happy.
Yeah, it was like everyone else around him looked like they lived in that town and were having a hard time. And he was just like, hey, look at me. I'm beautiful and smiley.
I'm in Star Wars.
So happy to be here.
I had to get used to how skinny he was. Like it felt, I thought when they first reveal him wearing the helmet, it made him look like a bobblehead because his body's so skinny. And
yeah,
and just the way the armor kind of hung off of him, he doesn't look as awesome in it as the Mandalorian does.
Right.
But I didn't mind him. Like I like that guy as an actor. So I think he did a pretty good job.
Yeah.
The armor didn't
when
fit
he
him.
Appeared in the doorway. I thought he was female at first.
The armor didn't fit him well. I mean, his belly was exposed and that made me nervous.
I think he was too tall for it. Yeah.
And I don't know if they were trying to sort of mimic when the sheriff has his like gun belt hanging off his waist or what was up with that. But yeah, it did look a little weird. But I liked Tim Oliphant and I enjoy watching him. Now that you're saying that, I kind of agree though, Rich. He was a little too happy for the environment. We went to school with him, by the way. Did you know him?
No, I do remember his name but no. That's so long ago now, I don't really remember.
He was a senior when we were freshmen, and he was like big man on campus, but I think he was a nice guy.
Yeah, he's certainly a good-looking fella.
Yeah.
He really is.
So, let's see. And I liked he orders a drink for them, and he sits down at the table, and I'm like, how are they going to drink this? And then he takes his helmet off, and that was a big deal. It's like, oh, yep. He's not a Mandalorian. He's not following the code. That was kind of a cool.
Yeah.
I loved when he started telling his story, his backstory. And he mentioned when they got the news of the Death Star blowing up and he goes, the second one that is, and we saw people watching the hologram of it, just kind of like evokes people in a bar watching something big on the news on TV or something. And they're all cheering and celebrating. And I just like to see the ramifications of the things that Luke and Leia and Han fought for, because I feel like that's one thing I did like about the special edition, by the way. At the end of Return of the Jedi, they showed celebrations in different like Cloud City and different places, because otherwise it just felt like, wow, they just destroyed the Empire and they're just showing like an Ewok party and that's it. So it felt a little anticlimactic.
Well, you know, that's one of the things missing from the original Star Wars trilogy, right? It's all about like the big battles, the big deal, and who's making that happen. And there's a whole universe of people out there that this affects, right?
Yeah.
You don't really see. And the Mandalorian is helping to fill that in a little bit with stuff like this, which is one of the other things I really like about this show and how it uses little bits from the larger Star Wars universe, but doesn't focus on them because we all know those stories. But how it affects these other people, you know, it's great.
Yeah. I mean, Luke started out as one of those people, as this moisture farmer looking up at the sky, dreaming of adventure. But then once he got up there, he forgot about the little people.
He did. He left them all behind.
I love the scene when they're approached by these Mando and Cobb Vanth are approached by these roaring, growling reptile creatures, and Cobb Vanth looks nervous and he's ready to shoot him, but then Mandalorian makes this growly sound and calms him down and then starts like scratching one, like scratching a dog behind the ears. And
yeah,
that was just kind of a nice moment.
That was a bit of a turn.
Yeah.
Like, oh, right. What's going on here?
And I looked them up. Those are Massifs, a reptilian species of dangerous hunters domesticated for sentry and guard tasks. And I guess they were seen in Attack of the Clones and the Clone Wars series.
I wonder if those were the things that ate the one-eyed guy. They're all on the same planet, right?
Yeah. No. I didn't look those up, but no, they're not, because he wasn't on Tatooine during that scene.
That's right.
Somewhere else.
Oh, okay. I mean, oh, yeah, that's right, because he said he could find him on Tatooine.
Yeah, yeah. Could be the same, but I don't think that was the idea. And then last, just the crate dragon, like, they did such a good job of making it look massive, you know, just this big, gigantic thing, but making just the right effects to make that believable. It just looked really good. And I liked how the sand became like water when it was burrowing under. It was like big ocean waves. And when they're watching the Tusken take a Bantha out to the opening of the Great Dragon's Cave, calling for it, and then it comes out and eats him instead.
I was wondering, like, how do they choose who gets that job? Because I don't want that job.
Right. Low man on the totem pole.
Wrong,
yeah, really.
And then Mando says they might be open to some fresh ideas. That was great.
Yeah. The Krayt Dragon was amazing. I was thinking too, like, it looked awesome and it was huge and terrifying. And I was thinking, imagine how much sand that thing eats just by moving around.
Right.
Underground. And, you know, it must
have like a sand release valve or something.
Sort of evolutionary change to its digestive system so that it can eat sand people and sand. Yeah.
At the end, when they blew it up too, with the special effects were incredible because you got all the sand flying everywhere. You could see the shockwave travel through the ground, make dust everywhere, and then you got all the guts and green stuff flying out too. It was like, man, that was a serious scene.
Yeah,
great effects.
Yeah,
good, so good. And then it spat acid all over everybody and just dissolved them into nothing almost instantly.
And then I loved when it kind of went down because the bomb didn't really do anything. And then it pops up out of the mountain at the top there. That looked really cool, too.
I know. We're like, what? Very cool. How did he get up there?
Pretty scary, considering it can just sort of disappear and then come up behind you, you know, or somewhere else.
So it fits in the tradition of big creatures in Star Wars, like that asteroid creature that the Millennium Falcon flew into. Or the Rancor that Luke fights at Jabba's palace, the Rathtar that Han and Chewie fight in Force Awakens. So, just a good addition to the pantheon there.
Yeah,
totally.
And then the last gambit that he did, he told Cobb Vanth, "Take care of the child," which to me is like, I may not make it out of this. This could be a suicide mission. And yeah, he like stands by the Bantha with the explosive strap to it and has Cobb Vanth shoot a rocket into the crate to get his attention, and then hits Cobb Vanth jetpack the same way Han accidentally did to that same jetpack when Boba Fett was wearing it.
Right.
Back in Return of the Jedi. Right. And then the crate swallowed the Bantha and Mandalorian, and we see the crate open its mouth, and there's some electricity in there, so I guess he shocked it somehow so he could get out, right? And then he detonated the bombs.
Yeah, he knew what he was doing. I'm sure it was risky, but he's like, I gotta get this Bantha inside to blow it up, and then I have to get out. But he knew he had that shocking thing to get out of there.
That was the plan, yeah.
They gotta fix those backpacks. That's...
Yeah.
To, you know, if anybody can just walk up and start it like that.
Right. Boom. If my backpack did that, I wouldn't turn my back on my enemies.
Right.
No.
Like, I better get rid of this giant red button on.
Do not press this button.
Bang here to launch. Yeah.
Okay, Chris, what's your number two?
Well, just before I do my number two, in case anyone's interested, like you were talking about the city and Cobb and stuff, and again, I've mentioned how this show uses sort of the expanded Star Wars universe really well. Like Mos Pelgo, I looked it up. It's only ever been mentioned before in the video game Star Wars The Old Republic Knights of the Eternal Throne, which is an expansion set for the Old Republic video game. So, you know, the writers are going deep to find things to use here. And same goes with Cobb Vanth. Like, he was in a 2015 Star Wars novel called Aftermath, which, you know, I'm sure plenty of people have read, but in the grand scheme, not too many. So, you know, they're looking for stuff to include in this show to just expand it out. And I think they're doing a really good job with those kind of things.
And it's cool that they could just make up all new stuff, which is fun too, but it's kind of neat that they take stuff that exists in the lore and just revisit it and use it. That's cool too, because there's so much there.
There's so much.
But the novels, it's a trilogy, and I think that was the first novel that came out after Disney bought Star Wars and said, okay, all that extended universe stuff is no longer canon. and anything released from now on will be. So I think that was the first novel that was canon. And yeah, it tells the story that pretty much tells, well, Cobb Vanth isn't the main character from what I haven't read it, but what I read, he's like a side character, but the three novels tell the right story that he recounted in this episode.
That's cool. I want that job. I want to be the person who keeps track of the Star Wars canon for Disney.
There's like some guy, somebody Hidalgo, who does a lot of that, and he like works on those Star Wars visual encyclopedias and everything.
Cool. Those are really sounds cool. Like a fun job.
Yeah.
Anyways, my actual number two is the Sand People / Tusken Raiders. I've always found them to be pretty interesting, but didn't have too much information on them, right? All we kind of knew about this race was what we got in the original trilogy. And in that, they were really portrayed as these just brutal, like killers kind of, right? They savages, exactly. There wasn't much to them, but we got a lot more information about them in this episode. I thought we learned that they have this, what I thought was a pretty neat, unique language where it's kind of a combination of grunts and groans and then sign language as well, yeah. Which I thought was really cool. And they're obviously smarter and more intelligent than they were portrayed in the original trilogy, because they can be communicated with, you can partner with them. They have, things they need and stuff, and they understand that kind of stuff, those sorts of things. We saw them in a settlement where they're living in these little tents, and they sit around a fire and they have a conversation. And so I just thought all that was really interesting, and I liked learning more about the Sand People because I've always kind of wondered about them. The thing I still don't know is what is the deal with their faces, because I've never really understand if they're wearing masks and they look different under them, or if those like metal things there are implants of some kind, or what's going on there. But I'll be surprised if they get into that at any point, although it does make me curious.
I mean, they're kind of like the too. Mandalorian. They don't take off their masks.
Oh, well, maybe. Yeah. And it's maybe all dress the same too.
Feels connected. Yeah. Yeah.
Could be. But I think they're an interesting group, and they got a little short shrift in the original trilogy, but they're expanding on it now. So I think it was fun to see them do some stuff.
In the second trilogy too, didn't Anakin Skywalker go in and slaughter a bunch of them because they killed his mom or something like that?
In the prequel trilogy? Yeah,
the prequel.
In Attack of the Clones. And I don't remember what their settlement looked like, but I do remember they had a primitive settlement.
Well, they're fascinating. And, I don't think they'll play too big a part in the rest of the show, but I'm glad they were included here because you can't do Tatooine without Sand People, clearly.
Well, I had them in my lore section, but I'm going to just read that part right now since we're talking about it. So they're indigenous to Tatooine. We've seen them as savages in Star Wars. We saw them attack Luke and had to be scared away by Ben mimicking the sound of a Krayt dragon, actually. And in Revenge of the Sith, they killed Anakin's mother, and so he went and slaughtered them. We saw last season when Mando went to Tatooine, he encountered them, and he used sign language with them, and he was patient with them. And the rookie bounty hunter guy, Toro, said, Tusken Raiders, I heard the locals talking about this filth. And Mando says, Tuskens think they're the locals. Everyone else is just trespassing. So he's looking at things, from a broader perspective. And Wikipedia says the Sand People believe that all water was sacred and promised to them, resulting in them raiding moisture farms set up by colonists. So they see these colonists as like invaders or intruders. That's why they raid, because they feel like the intruders are taking their resources.
Right.
And it said they wear the masks to help keep the moisture in and the sand out, but they're forbidden to remove their clothing in front of others, kind of like Mandalorian. Oh. That's what Wikipedia says. But I really like the idea that these guys have been seen as enemies, but Mando is kind of this fringe guy who's on the, he's in the gray area. And so it makes more sense for him to be friends with them maybe and have empathy for both groups of people in this episode. And Vanth is like, hey, these guys attacked us, killed half a dozen people. And so when Mando's trying to convince the townspeople to trust them, He says, I know these people, they're brutal, but so is the Dune Sea. They've survived for thousands of years in these sands, and they know how the Krayt Dragon better. They know the Krayt Dragon better than anyone here. They are raiders, it's true, but they also keep their word. We've struck a deal. If we're willing to leave them the carcasses and its ichor, they will stand by our side in battle and vow never to raise a blaster against this town until one of you breaks the peace. Which I thought, that sounds like a great deal. You get rid of the dragon and the sand people at the same time. And so it was fun to watch them make this uneasy truce, but there's tension, like when Cobb Vanth doesn't want to drink that drink, and and then he does end up drinking it later. I didn't catch that the first watch, but when they're approaching the Krayt Dragon with all their, one hands it to him, and he's like, okay, fine.
He's like, this may be my last drink, right?
So anyway, yeah, it's interesting because, yeah, they're presented as villains, but now we see a fuller picture of them. And I always like when TV shows do that. They get you thinking one way about someone, but then you get to know them a little better and your perspective has changed.
Well, Mando's equal opportunity when it comes to his enemies, right? He's got nothing against anybody until you double cross him. So
yeah, and then you're toast.
Then you're toast. You don't want to
pay
that.
Him. Yeah.
But you said they used the sign language last season. I don't remember that. I thought that was new.
I think I remember Mando using a couple of signs. Because remember when that guy Toro was talking about the sand people, and he's like, why don't you ask him yourself? And he turns around and there's two standing right there. And I think he did, but I don't think he used the language, though. I think this was the first time he started talking to them in their own language.
Right. Yeah, I forgot about that scene, but the language was cool, too, just sort of grunting and groaning language.
Right.
I mostly just thought it was neat, though, how it was a combination of both, right? And I'm not clear, though, on whether that's just the way, like, an English or speaker communicates with them, or if they communicate to each other like that. But I got the feeling that's the way they did it. It was kind of a combo sign, verbal language, which is a neat concept, I think.
It is. Yeah, it's interesting. And it's interesting in Star Wars, you kind of have to suspend your disbelief. Like, how the hell can Han Solo understand Chewbacca when he just goes all the time?
Yeah. Good point.
But that's just the way it is. Or droids, you know, like people can understand BB-8.
Hey, well, people can understand I am Groot, too.
That's right. So my number two, is it my turn? No, I think it's your turn, Rich. Sorry.
Number two, you know, along the same vein there, I really enjoy the feel of this episode. You know, it really works in well with with everything, all the, like we were just talking about, all the lore, all the canon, the backstory of what happens to Cobb Vanth after the destruction of the second Death Star was pretty awesome. And there's, you know, the whole show feels like it was made in the time just after Return of the Jedi. I mean, like we were saying earlier, if you go back to 1983, Return of the Jedi, this feels like it was made in 1988, you know? All the familiar creatures, the Tatooine architecture, like you were mentioning, the weapons, the, you know, the blasters with the red blaster, the mentioning of the Sarlacc. I was like, Sarlacc, I haven't heard that in years. You know?
Even the tone, too, though. It's like a show from an earlier time with modern effects.
Yeah, exactly. And a shout out to the special effects, because they use a lot of practical effects in this show. And, you know, and then, of course, the CGI just kind of amplifies it. And it totally calls back to the feel of the original movies. Like the one-eyed guy. What was his name? Gore Koresh. Yeah, Gore Koresh. I don't know if he was completely CGI or not, but he had the same feel as almost like a puppet, you know?
He looked great.
The way he was moving. The way he was talking. I know his eye was obviously CGI, but I was like, oh, that's cool.
John Leguizamo, right? Did his voice?
Yeah.
And then he also had Cobb on a pod racer from episode one. So I'm like, hey, they worked in a whole bunch of cool stuff here. It really had a good feel to it.
I think that his speeder bike was half of Anakin's pod racer. I think it looked just like it, and I think they were going for that. Like it was one of the engines ripped off of Anakin's pod with a seat sort of retrofitted onto it for him to ride. I think that was a really cool bit.
It looked like it, because all those pod racers looked, they had the same basic shape, but they looked pretty different aesthetically. And this was like a land speeder using, I mean, a speeder bike using pod racer parts, and they looked just like Anakin's. And I think that's cool, but I'm also, it sort of gave me a little bit of the feeling like when you find out that Anakin created C-3PO, I'm like, that's a bit of a coincidence.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit. But it was cool, like when Mando's riding on his, and then Cobb Vanth comes up by his side, and it just looked way cooler, like he was on a big penis or something. Like, check out mine.
Mine's way bigger than yours.
Yeah. That's why Mando was staring at him.
Then they just kind of have this casual conversation as they're flying along.
Do you, you Dick Rider?
Anything else on number two?
I just, you know, the whole idea of that this show is watchable by anybody. I mean, you could be a first time viewer and you would enjoy it. You could be a super hardcore fan and you would enjoy it because of all the canon and callbacks to do.
Yeah.
It's like, it reminds me of differentiated instruction. You know, in school, you got to teach to everybody and everybody watches and learns at a different level. And this show is like a perfect example of that. It's awesome.
It's a really good point. I mean, all the peripheral stuff expands it if you get it, but it doesn't take away from it if you don't. It's really
great. Right.
And you could have someone who's like way smarter than us that would be getting even more out of it than we did.
Tons. Yeah. Tons.
Yeah. You can go as deep as you want. Yeah.
Okay, my number two is balancing edginess with Disneyness, which, you know, we were sort of wondering, oh, now that Star Wars has Disney, is this show going to be like a kid's show? But when I thought about it, balancing the darkness and edginess with cuteness and kid appeal has always been a tricky balance with Star Wars. Like, in Star Wars, you've got arms and legs being chopped off, and you've got Ewoks, and you've got fathers killing sons and sons killing fathers, and you got Jar Jar Binks. So it's always been there, and they don't always get it right, and sometimes they really do. I actually think Baby Yoda is probably the most successful cute thing Star Wars has ever made in anything, you know?
Yeah. Especially for merchandising.
Yeah, but it's just like the way he acts and looks and everything, just like you see an Ewok and you're like, eh, it kind of looks like a little teddy bear. They're kind of cute, I guess, but they look a little out of place or something. But with Baby Yoda, for me anyway, I'm like, oh, he's so cute.
That's all my wife does all episode long. I want a Baby Yoda.
Yeah, my daughters are like that too. They watch the show pretty much just for Baby Yoda.
I got the like little 6-inch Mandalorian, and then I got what I thought was the Baby Yoda that went with it, but it's way too small, so it like goes right up to his calf. It's, I'm like, I don't think they have one the right size. Anyway, so this episode had some kid appeal. Like we said, Baby Yoda wasn't a main part of the action, and I'm glad of that. It was kind of cool to have an episode that wasn't focused on him, but he was there the whole time, and we saw his reactions to everything, and he looks worried about those red-eyed creatures in the beginning, and it was super cute when Mandalorian in the fighting arena activated his whistling bird weapon, and Baby Yoda like quickly closes the lid on his cradle.
Dink. That was the most adorable part, I think. Just hit the button and cower away inside.
He ain't no dummy.
Or his like he's riding on the speeder bike and his ears are flapping in the wind, stuff like that. It all works for me, and I'm glad that it was not a huge part of it, but it's the perfect amount for me. But Pelimoto, I feel like she's a bit too Disney for me. And I felt like that when we saw her before too, just a little exaggerated in her demeanor. I mean, she's okay. She's fine, but she even has those cute little robots that just scream prequels, the pit droids.
Yeah. The robots are the thing that I don't like about her. Her character is fine. You I like don't her, mind yeah. her at all, but those robots I could do without.
And they're having trouble with the vacuum and everything.
She's mean to her droids. Did you guys catch that? She's like ordering them around. Yeah. She's like exasperated and impatient with them. And I started thinking, well, why would anyone program a droid to be clumsy and stupid then? I mean, just fix it. You don't have to be complaining about it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Good point.
Droids often get the shit end of the stick in these movies.
Yeah, they do.
You know. But now there was darkness too, like Gorkoresh in the beginning shot that Gamorrean who was fighting. And then the darkest part is when Mando said to Gorkoresh, "I promise you will not die my hand," and then left him hanging there and to be killed by those beasts. And he's like, "Mando, you can't leave me like this." And
he's, he kind of had to. I mean, the guy just admitted to killing a bunch of Mandalorians.
Yeah. And he goes, "Cut me down, man." And Mando says, "That wasn't part of the deal," which reminded me of Lando always saying, "This deal's getting worse all the time," to Vader.
Yeah.
That is a Batman thing to say, too.
That wasn't part of the deal.
Yeah, that's not part of the deal. Yeah, he makes deals.
Batman would not have shot the light out and let the animals kill him. That was pretty dark. I mean, I don't blame him, but...
Comic book Batman would have.
I don't think he kills. I don't know. So, anyway, so then, you know, sand people died in this episode. Cobb Vanth shot a rocket at a land speeder full of miners. So people died, but it's kind of funny that Mando is okay with his kids seeing violence. Like, two people question him about it. Gorkoresh says, "You know, this is no place for a child." He goes, "Wherever I go, he goes." And then when Mandalorian is confronting Cobb Vanth, when they first meet about wearing the Mandalorian armor, he says, "Take it off or I will." And he goes, "We're going to do this in front of the kid." And he goes, "He's seen worse." And I'm like, I identify with this. I let Nico watch Stranger Things when he was too young. And I remember we were playing Gears of War and you chopped a guy's head off and your daughter's like, "Where'd the head go?"
Yeah, that's right. She's probably only 3 or 4 years old. "Where'd the head go?"
So it's kind of, I mean, I've said before, this is totally like a dad show. And you kind of have to have this as an issue because Baby Yoda is so popular that he needs to be in the story. Like, the people who make this show know that, but he's going to see violence then because it's kind of a violent show. And they could have left him with Pelimoto again, but I'm glad that he was around to give his little reactions and be cute and stuff.
Yeah. You know what? The difference between Baby Yoda and the Ewoks, for example, is, you know, Return of the Jedi was, when I was younger, was my favorite of the original trilogy for a while, at least. And I had no problem with Ewoks at the time. I thought they were great. But as I got older a little bit, I started thinking, well, okay, they are awfully capable for like little jungle bears, you know? They have all kinds of weapons. They do all kinds of stuff with logs and they take out AT-STs. Like, that seems a little crazy. And I know they've given Baby Yoda the Force, so Baby Yoda can do all kinds of stuff with the Force, but they use it sparingly. And other than that, you know, the child doesn't do that much. It doesn't feel like super overpowered a little bit, you know, and it's just kind of there to be cute sometimes. And, you know, is integral to the main character's mission. Right. And sort of supports that. So I think
he acts like a baby, like when he messes with the controls in the ship, or when he had that frog and Mando said, "Spit it out," and he just ate it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it kind of makes a little bit more sense than the Ewoks did, I think, but also super cute, sells a million toys and, you know, gets more people to watch the show. You know, I don't know that everybody else in my family would be as into it if it wasn't for Baby Yoda.
Right. So, I mean, it would be cool to have like a hard boiled Star Wars that was totally R rated, you know, but I think this version is pretty damn good and it still is edgy enough for me that I'm satisfied with it. And it is, I think, even more in the tradition of Star Wars than a really hard boiled one would be.
I agree. That would be cool. But if one franchise doesn't do that, I could see Star Wars being the one because it's just never been its thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Baby Yoda's like the carrot in front of the horse, huh? Because you're always, as cute as he is, you're always wondering what's going to happen. You know, what's his part in all this, you know?
Yeah. That's one of the things I am curious about that, well, I don't know. I hope we find out at some point, if not this season, then at some point, what is the deal with the Yoda race that's remained a mystery throughout all of Star Wars?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what it would be cool to have some of that revealed.
Is Baby Yoda the MacGuffin of this show? Like the thing that is just there to keep the plot moving forward?
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe. Yeah. But that also doesn't bother me that much. I think it's okay.
I mean, it's cool that the MacGuffin is entertaining to watch.
Yeah, that helps. That helps and isn't completely out of place.
Unlike the AllSpark.
Right.
So what's your number one, Chris?
Well, I mean, do we have to talk about the final scene, like the reveal at the end? I don't know how much we can say or how much we can talk about it, really.
I think
but,
we should,
you know,
fully talk about
my number one.
Think.
We got to talk about it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, as Mando is leaving on the speeder bike with his big chunk of great dragon meat and the Boba Fett's armor, you know, we see a character look on from a sand dune and turn around, and that's Boba Fett. So it's a pretty,
but is it though?
I guess we don't know. The actor that's standing there is credited as Boba Fett on IMDb. Who knows though, really?
I think it is, but
I think so for sure. What I was thinking though is, you know, that's cool. That's the, you know, everyone wants to see this character. Everyone wants to find out what's happened with him and what he's been doing. And to the show's credit, I'm glad they didn't sort of drag that out. I know they didn't say explicitly this is who this is, but they didn't keep it from us for 4, 5, 8 episodes and like bring him in at the end or anything.
What if we never see him again? That would be kind of dumb.
Well, that'll be kind of dumb for sure. But you know,
well, you know, he's like, not the MacGuffin then.
No, he's not. But I was thinking they reveal Baby Yoda at the end of the first episode of season one. They didn't hold back on us there. And now they've revealed presumably Boba Fett at the end of the first episode of season two. So it's a little bit of a parallel there, but the show doesn't screw around with surprise reveals. They're like, you know what? We're doing this and there'll be some mystery, but you know, something's going to happen here. So I'm excited. I'm curious. But we don't know a lot at this point.
Yeah.
I'm just looking forward.
Boba Fett is my number one too. And I amused myself because as I was watching the show, I was taking notes and it kept popping up. So I wrote it down. Mm-hmm. I wrote, is that Boba Fett's armor? You know, when we first saw that, I was like, ah, so Fett is dead. And then later on, I was like, oh no, the Sarlacc was eaten by the dragon. Now Fett is double dead. And then at the end, it's like, whoa, that was Boba Fett. He's alive.
Oh, the show but keeps pulling the rug out from under you.
He was a clone, right? So they have an out here is what I'm thinking. You know, he's a clone of his dad, as were all the clones in the clone army. So it could have been one of them as easily as it could be Boba Fett, I'm thinking. But I don't see why they would do that, to be honest.
Yeah. I guess they have a lot of ways they can go here.
That's the thing is why it would be a disappointment. I don't think Jon Favreau would do that. You know, he's going to do the coolest thing, not the disappointing fake out.
Right.
That's a good point.
Psych.
Favreau knows what he's doing. He wants to do something awesome and please everybody. And he'll do it. He'll do it right.
Also, now, will Boba Fett be an ally or an enemy to Mando? Because I'm sure he's going to want his armor back.
Right. And I, you know, I didn't do the Boba Fett lore and callback thing for my last point because I feel like we're going to see him again. So I was just going to save it. But there's a lot to go into in his history. And if I remember right, his father, Jango, wasn't actually considered a true Mandalorian. And so neither maybe was Boba Fett. I'm not sure about that, but that might play into it a little bit too.
Oh, that would be interesting. Like the one guy you think is a true Mandalorian, or at least a lot of people, fans probably do. If he's not, that's going to be an interesting dynamic between our Mandalorian and
who's so devout and loyal and to the point where like he makes friends with Cobb Vanth and sees that he's a good man. And yet, and Cobb Vanth, when he first met him, said, well, this armor is what allowed me to save all these townspeople. And Boba Fett still takes it anyway, because he's just loyal to the cause and, you know, the Mandalorian creed over just about anything else.
Yeah. It'll be disappointing if Mando just ends up taking it somewhere and melting it down and we never see it again.
He makes like he needs a rocket, so he should take the rocket.
Makes a hood ornament out of it. Yeah.
The hood ornament. He puts
for the
it on
razor
the
razor crest.
Yeah, that's right.
Just like Boba Fett's head on the front.
Insult.
Wow. Maybe he isn't so serious in, right. in all this.
He's just chuckling himself. Yeah, I like I liked how they revealed that, because you see this cool long shot of Mandalorian speeding across the desert with like sand kicking up behind, and then you see a lone figure with the twin Tatooine sons, and yep. He's got, I read, a gaff stick of a Tusken Raider, so maybe he's like hiding out as a Tusken Raider. I don't know. But yeah, it's played by Temuera Morrison, who played Jango Fett in Attack of the Clones, and we learned that he was the first person, or he's the one that they got all the DNA for all the clone troopers that were the clone, you know, in the Clone Wars. And he, in the Clone Wars cartoon, played all the clone troopers' voices, and they all look like him. So if you watch that, you'll see Temuera Morrison's face on like hundreds of clones.
Oh, that's right. Cool. That's cool. And did you guys know notice the aspect ratio change just for that final scene? The black bars of a widescreen sort of grew a little bit, I think, to make it even more widescreen and a little bit more epic of him standing there.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's cool.
Okay. Anything else you want to say about that, Rich?
Oh, yeah. You know, I picked this up offline. I didn't catch it myself, but back in season one, when Mando killed Fennec Shand and his body was lying in the desert, and we saw some boots walk up, and that's all we saw were some boots.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if we can say that was Boba.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Seems more likely now, because we were thinking Boba Fett, but then we thought maybe it was Giancarlo Esposito's character.
Right.
What's his name? Moff Gideon. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's a good chance it was him.
So he's been there. He might be in the know.
Okay, lore and callbacks. This is kind of a long one, but I'll try to get through it. So this Gor Koresh guy, John Leguizamo, he's Abyssin. One of them was in the cantina in Star Wars.
Mm.
And yeah, I thought they did such a great job of making him look real, the way his mouth moved, and it didn't look too CG to me.
Are they all Cyclops?
Yeah.
They all have one eye? Yeah. Okay.
The Gamorrean, of course, we saw Jabba had a bunch of Gamorrean guards at his palace, those green pig-like guys that were fighting in the ring.
Yeah. Hey, the pig guys.
They're pretty cool. I like them a lot. And
yeah.
What were the weapon? They were using vibro axes or something? Axes,
yeah. Apparently they show up in Star Wars every once in a while.
It was cool. I like those.
And they're described as low intelligence, loyal, and stubborn.
Just like a pig.
Let's see. The R5 unit that Pelimoto has that projects the map of Tatooine is the same one that Luke first bought from the Jawas, R5-D4, but then its motivator fritzed out. Psh! You can see the scoring outline around one of the squares in its head here. And so that's cool. When he took it back and, hey, this one has a bad motivator, and got R2-D2.
Lucky for everyone. Maybe
he whined it. This one has a bad motivator.
Yeah. Right. Oh, Uncle Owen. And then they mention on that map, Mos Eisley, that's where the cantina is and where Luke and Ben went to find passage to Alderaan. Mos Espa is where the pod race was in Phantom Menace, with that big, giant, stupid arena with the radio announcers that I hate. And now that Mos Pelga, I don't know if you said that's been mentioned in some games, and I wonder if it was in those books. If those books had Cobb Vanth, you would think Mos Pelga would have been in there too.
You would think. The place is also called Freetown, I think, after it gets destroyed or rebuilt. So maybe they called it that. From what I could tell, it was just that Old Republic video game expansion.
Okay.
Could be in other places.
The Bantha, I'm not sure we've talked about them, but there's big, like, hairy mammals that we see with tusks. They were hanging out with the Sand People in Star Wars, and they're bred on many worlds throughout the galaxy. They're easily domesticated. They're used by Tusken Raiders as mounts and companionship, but they never kill them for their food or hide, even though other people do. The Tusken Raiders don't, apparently. Of course, they do actually use them as bait for big monsters, though. So there's that.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's that. Doesn't always work, but right. They try.
The Bantha ain't too bright either. It just stands chance. There.
In Star Wars, it was an elephant dressed up to look like, you know, a Bantha.
Oh, neat.
Well, we already talked a lot about. Oh, Cobb Vanth, he orders two snorts of Spotchka. Spotchka was that drink they made from krill that the villagers farmed on Sorgan in that one episode last season.
Oh.
With that ATST.
Oh, right.
It's a nice tie-in.
Yeah, it was a little tie-in. Okay, crate dragons. So the crate dragon is definitely an element of the original Star Wars that I remembered it had been on my mind. In that movie, Luke is out in the desert with the droids looking for the mysterious Obi-Wan Kenobi, and he's looking through his binoculars, and he sees a couple of Bantha and sand people in the distance, and then one jumps right up in front of him, and it scared the shit out of me as a little kid.
Right.
Remember that scene? And
yeah.
Then you see him, he's knocked out, and they're rummaging through his land speeder, and then you hear this crazy, weird howling sound and they all scurry off, and that's the first appearance of Ben Kenobi, this hooded figure, and he's mimicking a crate dragon.
Right.
And so now, this is the first time we've seen one in any of the movies. We did see in Star Wars C-3PO as he was wandering through the desert, pissed off that R2-D2 tricked him into going the wrong way, and he sees that long skeleton, so it's the skeleton of the crate dragon. He walks right by it. But they weren't named in the movie, but in the 1981 Star Wars radio dramatization, Ben Kenobi says, "I imitated the hunting cry of a crate dragon." And they've been in other materials since then. So it was really fun to see, okay, now I understand why the sand people would be freaked out and take off just by hearing that sound, you know?
Right.
Totally makes sense. According to the 2017 Star Wars, the Visual Encyclopedia, their bodies produced a toxin called crate venom, which they spray upon a living creature in order to prepare it for digestion. So we saw that. And their bodies secrete precious pearls, which are much sought after valuable commodity, sometimes used in making lightsaber gems. So That's why it was part of the sand people's deal, if they were going to help them, to be able to keep the carcass and everything about it. Cause I think they wanted to find one of those pearls, and they did. He was all excited about it at the end. I thought it was an egg at first. So here's the sound of the crate dragon that Ben Kenobi makes in Star Wars.
Okay.
Now they changed that in the special editions, I think even twice, but I don't know what it sounded like the first time, but I imagine Mandalorian is probably using the latest version. But anyway, it doesn't quite sound exactly the same. Here it is in this week's episode of The Mandalorian. You never really get a clear howl, but I think it's, you know, supposed to be the same.
You know what? That's not as different as I thought it was going to be when you played that. It was similar enough.
You can tell.
Yeah. It's good.
And then the Sarlacc. So as we know, Boba Fett, last we saw on screen, Han Solo accidentally hit his backpack. He shot right into the side of Jabba's sail barge and slid down and fell into the Sarlacc pit. And they said he would be digested in there over millennia. And here, Mando says that the crate dragon lives in an abandoned Sarlacc pit. Cobb Vanth says, "I've lived on Tatooine my whole life. There's no such thing as an abandoned Sarlacc pit." Well, there is if you eat the Sarlacc. So it was cool to remind us of the Sarlacc, because this is a kind of Boba Fett-y episode, and that's how he died. But I wasn't clear, like, were they saying that cave was a Sarlacc pit? Because that's not the same one. The Sarlacc pit in Return of the Jedi is like a hole in the ground, not a cave. So I was a little confused about that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is a little bit confusing from my understanding. Well, and this may be obvious, sorry, but like the Sarlacc is different. When I was a kid, I used to think the Sarlacc pit was more about the pit than what was in it. But the Sarlacc is a creature that lives in these giant holes, right? And the Sarlacc is the thing with all the tentacles and the teeth.
Well, it is now that the special edition came out. At first, it was just a hole with teeth around it, but then they made it what's that movie with the monster flowers with Rick Moranis?
Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah. Right. Well, but even in the original versions, it had a tentacle because it grabs. Lando, you're right.
That's true. Yeah, good point.
Yeah,
It actually makes sense for it to be in a cave, though, because people would want to seek shelter in a cave, right?
Yeah,
having a Sarlacc out in the open desert is like, who the hell's wandering around out there?
Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't know if this was a different Sarlacc, you know, and that's what Mando was saying the crate dragon killed. And so maybe they're not even talking about the same one that maybe ate, you know, Boba Fett. So I don't know.
It's possible too, yeah.
Well, seeing it's, they're playing a little fast and loose with the details of the Sarlacc, I think. So that's okay.
Wikipedia said that they're mobile at first, but once they reach their maturity after 30,000 years, they burrow themselves nearly 100 meters below the surface, feeding on creatures unfortunate enough to fall into their mouths. Victims of the Sarlacc are injected with immobilizing neurotoxins that cause constant pain, and while still conscious, digested for millennia due to the creature's weak stomach acid. That doesn't sound fun.
Nope, not even a little bit.
Let's see. Oh, yeah, I got to do this one. So, Cobb Vanth mentioned that when he was run out of Mos Pelga, he grabbed a Camtono, and he didn't know it was full of silicax crystals. Those are a valuable mineral mined on Tatooine that he could use to pay for Boba Fett's armor. But that reminded me of how we think Camtono got its name. That's that container that kind of looks like an ice cream maker. And we saw one in Empire Strikes Back, but it wasn't ever named. And we've seen it a few times in The Mandalorian, most prominently when it's carrying all the Beskar that he gets for bringing back the child, Baby Yoda. So something, I'm going to play this again just because I think it's fun, but something John Favreau or someone working on The Mandalorian figured out the name for that because they saw this, because it looks like an ice cream container, and they saw this video of a guy and his daughter.
Say, I?
I.
Love?
Love.
Ice cream.
Cantono.
So I thought that was
pretty
funny.
Cute.
Yeah. Two more. So at one point, Mandalorian said when the creature didn't come out far enough and it was going back in, he goes, "Dank Ferrick, it's going back in." So I looked that up. It's an exclamatory expression used by mithril in shock or relief following a traumatic event. Mithril are the species of that blue guy in the first episode that Mandalorian picked up as a bounty.
Then
I looked at the script for that episode, and after they escaped, that episode had a burrowing creature too, but it was in the ice, and remember, it chased grabbed onto the side of the Razor Crest and he had to shoot it off.
Oh yeah.
But that's right.
During that mithril guy said, "Dank Ferrick, that was close."
Okay.
So they're watching their details. And then the last thing is Cobb Vanth said, "It's picking us off like womp rats." They keep mentioning womp rats. Those are the things that Luke used to bullseye in Beggar's Canyon.
Right.
That's right. What does he say? "I used to bullseye them from a certain distance in Beggar's Canyon." Yeah.
Yeah. He said they weren't much more than 2 meters or whatever.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
I liked it too when Cobb was telling his backstory. And then he says, "I guess every once in a while, both suns shine on a womp rat's tail." I was like, well, that is such a Tatooine thing to say.
I know. Totally. You can only say that on Tatooine.
Yeah. I think there is one planet they've found that orbits two stars.
Oh yeah, there's a few. There's a few out there. They're rare though, because you have to orbit both stars. If you orbit one and you go in between the two stars, the planet usually gets torn apart.
That's not good.
Too much gravity in opposite directions.
Yeah.
Well, if we didn't name that planet Tatooine, we've missed our opportunity.
Right. Okay. What about notes, Chris?
You know what? I think we've covered everything I had down here for notes, so I think I'm good in that department.
Yeah, you know, the first thing that came to my mind when Mando went to see gore Koresh, and then Koresh shot one of his pig dudes, and then all the guns were thrown onto Mando's head. I was like, the very first thing that popped into my head was, it's a trap!
Actually, Jason, you didn't mention the Twi'lek at the door to the fighting place. So that's, another creature we've seen plenty of times in Star Wars, too. I like that guy.
Yeah, and they tend to be in areas like where there's seediness going on.
Right. That's right.
And then the other note I had was Pelimoto. She says, thank the Force. When she was talking to Mando about, everyone being safe. And I was thinking, I wonder if that's like, that's a belief, almost like a religion. I wonder, if the Force, thank the Force, thank God,
Or is it just some like tossed off saying that they don't even think what they're saying?
Right. Yeah. That's all for me.
All right. I had a few. In season one, episode two, I mentioned that the first episode didn't have a title. It was just chapter one, but I thought they would add one later, kind of like as an homage to Star Wars, A New Hope, which didn't get that A New Hope until a re-release. And I see now it's called Chapter One, The Mandalorian. So I think that's what they did. They added it later as an homage.
Very good.
We've heard that the Mandalorian isn't a race, it's a creed, but also that people who come from Mandalore are Mandalorian, so it's a bit unclear. But rewatching the series again yesterday, I noticed in the finale that Mandalorian said, the only record of my family name was in the registers of Mandalore. So I think he's saying that he came from Mandalore.
And you know what? That reminds me, the guy tending bar... didn't seem to know what a Mandalorian was, right? Because he had to say somebody that looks like me.
Yeah.
So it's not as maybe common. Not as widely known as we all kind of think it is.
Yeah. Yeah. That guy, by the way, the actor, I think he was in Deadwood along with Tim Oliphant.
Oh, okay.
I read that. I was thinking it was almost a liability to be walking around with that Beskar armor after what happened to Mando in the beginning. He got it, like all those guys trying to steal it from him. It's like if we were walking around in a bad part of town with a jacket made of iPhones or something.
My God. Yeah, don't do that.
That's what it felt like he was doing.
You'd have to learn to defend yourself for sure.
When he was fighting those guys, I noticed a knife popped out from his fist. I don't know if we've ever seen that. He stabbed one of them with it. I think that's
pretty handy. Pretty handy trick, though.
He stabbed them both.
Good to have, as long as it doesn't accidentally go off when you're flirting with girls on.
Or the flamethrower. He used the flamethrower to ease the tension at that campfire scene. You don't want that to accidentally go off either.
Right.
I found it a little hard to believe that would actually ease the tension.
That's a good point. It's if people are getting a little tense and you pull a gun, that doesn't help the situation.
You just introduce fire to the situation.
Right.
I think that was the first time seeing that the Fett antenna come down and be used as a scope. I just thought that was an antenna before. And also, I think it may have been the first time we've seen that rocket used.
It might be. I can't think of another time seeing the rocket
fire that off.
Yeah, but I've always been curious about that. How does it work and stuff like that.
Well, in live action, I've seen, the comics, you see him. Right. Yeah, in the cartoons, you see him do that stuff all the time.
Uh-huh. It was pretty fun, though. I enjoyed watching him. He used it twice, right? Yeah.
He used it on those miners and then used it on the creature. And it made me think, there's one thing Mando doesn't have yet. He can still level up by getting a rocket.
There you go.
When Mando parked his speeder bike, it started to putter like a motorcycle. And I didn't like that because usually they have more like electric sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, bah, 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 like that. And then I had a question. So he says to Gore Koresh, if I can locate other Mandalorian, they can help guide me, trying to find the Yoda species. I'm like, well, I wonder what makes him think that. Just because they're his people, so that's where he would naturally look for help.
maybe they're the people he trusts the most. I think it's unclear at this point.
Yeah. They could probably just point him in the right direction or who to talk to if they didn't know themselves.
I saw one of these little green things with big ears on this planet one time. Try there.
You're right.
Dagobah.
I heard.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. We'll take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us. And I think it's gonna be a long, long time. Touchdown brings me round again to find. I'm not the man they think I am at home. Oh, no, no, no. I'm a rocket man. Rocket man. Burning out his fuse out of every home. And I think it's gonna be a long. All right, we're back. It's time for some news. Just a few quick things. Directors for this season's episodes include Jon Favreau. I don't know if he'll do any more, maybe just this one. Returning directors Rick Famuyiwa, Bryce Dallas Howard, who's Ron Howard's daughter, and Dave Filoni, who's the guy that, like, he's the font of Star Wars knowledge that worked on Clone Wars and made the Rebels TV series. And new directors, Carl Weathers is going to direct one.
Cool.
That's cool. Peyton Reed, who did the Ant-Man movies, and Robert Rodriguez from Dusk Till Dawn.
Nice. That'll be a cool one.
I know. Yeah. That's the one I'm probably most excited about.
Do we know what episodes yet these people are doing?
I don't know.
No. Okay.
Rick Famuyiwa had like number 6 or 7, I think.
All right.
It'd be cool to get Sam Raimi in there, like see what he'd do.
Oh, that would be fun.
Someone asked Jon Favreau if he'd like to do a Mandalorian movie, and he said he's in no rush to push the show beyond a streaming series, quote, but we're definitely open to it. So what do you guys think about that idea?
Mandalorian movie?
A movie?
Maybe. I mean, I'm pretty satisfied with it as a show for now, too. But maybe they do one of those things where they do a few seasons in a movie, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel the same. Like, I wouldn't want them to disrupt the show, but maybe at the end.
Yeah. If it was a continuation.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I could be on board with something like that, but don't do a movie yet. We don't need it. We have a pretty awesome show here.
Don't screw it up like Rian Johnson.
X-Files did it kind of cool. They just had a movie in between seasons. That seemed to work pretty well. Maybe that would work. Who knows?
I guess it did, yeah.
There were rumors. I almost hesitate to bring this up because it was rumors, but it's kind of interesting. But take it with a huge grain of salt. That Pedro Pascal was being a diva and wanted to take the mask off and wanted more face time. And he was saying the costume was uncomfortable. Like, if you remember, we got reports on season 1 that he wasn't even there except for the scene where he showed his face. And it was always like Brendan Wayne or somebody else in the suit. Mm-hmm. And so he came in season 2, and they're saying he was like, when George Lucas visited, he told George Lucas, I don't want to wear this mask all the time. Who knows how much of that is true, but they even said that he got thrown off the set. Okay, fine. Just leave. And there are even rumors that Mandalorian would feature less prominently later in the later part of the season because of this. Now, that's what makes me think it's all bogus, because if you've got this all planned out, you're not going to change the storyline that much, you know?
No.
So
no, yeah.
Anyway, other sources have denied these rumors and said Pedro Pascal knew what he was getting into when he signed on, and that they still have those doubles, Brendan Wayne and Lateef Crowder, there to share time in the costume if it gets uncomfortable or whatever. So,
right. I mean, my understanding in season 1 is that Pedro Pascal did almost no work in the suit, right? In fact, he may not have even been cast until they'd shot a lot of it, from what I heard. But
I think so, yeah.
I think he does great with the voice work for it, and absolutely. I don't want to see him leave because he's really, really good at what he is providing. And I'm also wondering if now in season 2 he's doing more of the actual costume work.
I think he is.
Yeah, I would imagine so, because they have them, right?
I mean, we were talking about how the movements of the Mandalorian are so important to his character, especially since he doesn't talk that much. And so I was wondering if Pedro Pascal, you know, would change, if he would just kind of be swinging his arms weird or something. But right. I didn't notice anything.
No,
I thought... just the idea that someone would complain about being in Star Wars and getting paid that much money, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
To play a false, really cool character. You know? Gotta be fake.
And then last thing, I read that they're planning and hoping to start filming of season 3 before the end of this year, you know, depending on how they can work it with COVID restrictions and everything, but they're moving ahead.
Oh, wow, that's cool. Great. And quick, like they've just put season 2 out and they're going to start shooting season 2 right away. That's awesome.
I know. I mean, Jon Favreau is just kicking ass on this. He wrote this season, he wrote, I think, 7 of the 8 episodes.
Cool.
So he's just on fire. Okay, let's do some listener responses.
Okay. Alex Baelish writes in, what could be better than season 1? Season 2. I loved the opening right where we left off. And he is searching for his people. The spaghetti western look is great, I think. John Leguizamo was fun as Gore Koresh. Love that Mando says he will not die by his hand, then kills the lights for the wolves. Seeing Peli was great. She is such a fun character to see on screen. I love sarcasm with the droids. Timothy Oliphant brings his best. I love how we learn more about the Sand People and how the two sides must work together for a common goal. Although it did not really move the story all that much, it was a solid first episode. The grittiness of the first season was still there. Hashtag second season is on the way.
Awesome.
Good. Thank you, Alex.
Mark McBurney writes, well, that was just fantastic. Cobb Vanth was excellent in this episode and think he could be a great addition to Mando's team along with Kara. Now onto the fun stuff. That shot of Fett's armor inside the sandcrawler made me geek out big. No, I didn't realize that was his before then. A little happy and a little sad to know his fate, and then bam, Django turns up at the end. Just kidding, that was Boba, I think. After being disappointed at not seeing the crate dragon in the first season, they pulled off a Knights of the Old Republic Easter egg right out of the game, even going as far as cutting a deal with Tusken Raiders to kill it. They even added in the dragon pearl as an extra touch. And was that little Annie's pod racer?
I think it was.
I think so. Derek O'Neill says, I love this episode. So happy to have the show back weekly to bring a bit of light to the winter darkness. Loved having Timothy Oliphant doing his best Western Sheriff performance. Seeing Boba Fett's armor and that final scene reveal of Temuera Morrison was the perfect cherry on a great kickoff for the season.
Timothy Oliphant, I mean, if you need a guy to play a Western Sheriff, he is your man. So I'm not surprised. Dixon Sider writes, that's really lame. They are putting out weekly episodes. Like, the whole point of streaming services are to binge that shit in one night, then wait a year for the next batch. It's just the way it goes. It's, yeah.
Well, it's funny you didn't say this is the way.
This is the way it goes.
Yeah. No, I don't agree with that. I think it's cool, especially when I'm podcasting on something, to have it doled out and give us time to think about it and have it take up more space in the culture for a while versus, you know, just everybody binges it and then forgets about it the next week.
Yeah,
you
totally.
Can swim in it for a while. Yeah. Totally.
Some shows are okay to binge and some work better week to week. You know, I don't want to go too sidebar, but I just watched this Raised by Wolves show and I binged the whole thing, but I think that would have been way better week to week, but it's a different conversation.
Is that a good show?
I thought it started.
Thinking about watching it.
I thought it started amazing and just a little off the rails at the end. But I think if I'd watched it every week instead of like all in a weekend, I might have been a little more okay with it. So that's why I thought of it. It's not a great binging show.
Gotcha. Steve Barr says, it felt more aimed at kids than the episodes in the first season, but it's early days yet. I enjoyed it overall. Based on screen time, the show may need to be renamed Baby Yoda and Mando.
See, now it was this email that actually prompted me to do a point all about this because I don't agree with that. Like, Baby Yoda was not even part of the story.
Nope.
Yeah.
So
it wasn't in it like that much.
Yeah. And there was some pretty dark stuff. So I don't get that.
Steve, I could see, you know, you thinking that if Baby Yoda had played a huge part in the battle at the end, like use the force and save the day again. So that would have been bad. And I'm glad they didn't go that route. So I don't think we're at baby Yoda and Mando territory quite yet.
Maybe coming up though. Barry Evett says, great episode. Lots of Easter eggs for sharp-eyed fans and also an interesting story, some great new characters, and I have found this show's portrayal of the Tusken Raiders as more than just mindless villains to be refreshing. All in all, a strong start to the season.
Yep, totally agree about the Sand People. Damian Vitale? I thought it was great. An action-packed start to the season. Thrilled we got Boba Fett's armor as a tease and then actually saw him at the very end. Enjoyed the Timothy Oliphant character, although I wasn't sure if we were supposed to trust him at first, but as the episode played out, he seemed like another strong ally for Mando. Happy with all the Baby Yoda reaction shots, loved when he peeked out of the spittoon. Mm-hmm. Look forward to next week.
Jenny thought the same thing about the sheriff, and I think she was actually disappointed that he was pretty straightforward.
Oh, yeah.
And then we have a call from Steve Brown.
Hello, House Podcastica. This is Steve, and this is for The Mandalorian Season 2, Episode 1, The Marshal. I can't wait to watch this one again, but I wanted to throw out some initial thoughts. Absolutely love Timothy Oliphant. He's become one of my favorite actors, you know, and he's kind of, I don't know if he's being typecast really, because the different marshals that he's playing are very different characters. They're just all marshals, you know, from Raylan Givens to his part on Fargo, and then this episode here. And I don't know if we're going to see him again or not in the season. Hopefully we will get a chance to revisit him. I'm assuming because of that last shot with the guy, whoever that guy is, that we're going to see him again. I had one tiny criticism that at first the accent that Timothy Oliphant was putting on this marshal was really thick, and it was really going to bother me if it was going to stay like that. But he seemed to ease up on it kind of about halfway through the episode. It wasn't quite as thick. It wasn't quite as corn-pony as you know, as it sounded, or I'm not sure what the word is for it. But love the callback to he says the Death Star, the second one. Seeing some of those images and that little flashback that he gave us. And, you know, the only, again, and I think we're supposed to assume that the Mandalorian's armor is so important that was enough motivation for him to save this village, not just altruism. But I think he's starting to develop some altruism, right? You think? Because, you know, with the child and everything, but because it seemed like he could have just shot Timothy Oliphant and been like, all right, I'm just taking the armor. But he made the deal with him. So anyway, can't wait to hear your guys' thoughts. Talk to you later.
Yeah, that's a good point. He didn't have to help him.
No, but I guess. I it sort of makes, I don't know. You're right, he didn't have to help him, but it was a way to get a pretty good episode out of the show.
No, but I mean, it just points to his character. Like, he saw some innocent people in trouble and decided to help, I think. If he thought Cobb Vanth was like Gor Kuresh, he might have just hung him upside down and pulled the armor off of him and then let Crate Dragon eat him.
Yeah.
I think he just kind of like, I mean, he has such ability that he can afford to just kind of wait and see how things work out. And in this case, he got an ally.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I'm curious about what people think about Timothy Oliphant. We've talked about how, you know, he's a, or Steve mentioned how he's a little typecast, maybe. I wonder what people think about him in that Drew Barrymore show, Santa Clarita Diet, if anyone watched that, because he's a little different in that one.
I watched the first episode, and it wasn't grabbing me, so I didn't continue on, but I know people like it.
Yeah, just curious.
It was interesting, because I'd mentioned Deadwood, which I think maybe is the closest to this, but Steve didn't even mention that. He mentioned Fargo, which he's in the new season of Fargo, and Justified, which is a great show.
Right.
All right. What's going on next week on The Mandalorian?
Well, it's all rumor because Disney is being very protective of releasing information. So the only thing I could find is that, and this is just a rumor, it's not official, Chapter 10 is titled The Confrontation. Unfortunately, there's no synopsis to go with it. So,
what? There'll be some kind of confrontation, I guess.
Something's going to go down, right?
I think he's going to meet Darth Vader. No, I'm just kidding.
Ah.
He's going to confront his deepest inner fear.
Right.
Right. All right, that is our show. Thanks for listening, everybody. That was really fun. Glad to be back.
Yep, great time.
I'm glad it was a good first episode.
Oh, yeah.
Right, yeah. How much would it suck if it sucked?
It would suck.
Totally suck.
If you want to write in or record a message and send it in, you can email us at groovy@podcastica.com.
And check us out on our Facebook page at facebook.com/housepodcastica.
We're also on Twitter and Instagram at House Podcastica.
Please check out the other shows on the Podcastica Network at podcastica.com. And you can check out Chris's podcast at talkingdeadpodcast.com. And you guys are covering The Boys on there right now. Is that right?
No, we did one. We just did one episode on The Boys. Okay. Just we really wanted to talk about
it's
it.
Great
yeah,
show.
Now we're... It's an amazing show. Now we are into World Beyond and Fear.
Oh, so you're actually going to cover Walking Dead on there?
We've got a little bit of a twist on it. We're not sort of going deep into each and every episode. What we're doing, we're talking about each and every episode, but from a perspective of the greater Walking Dead universe. So we're not going to get bogged down in the plot details of each Fear episode and each World Beyond episode, but how they impact the main show and sort of the greater universe.
Interesting.
I think it's going to be fun. Yeah,
that's cool.
That's nice.
I mean, I thought Fear season 5 was a travesty.
It was a train wreck.
But I thought this most recent episode was one of the best episodes of Fear of all, with Althea.
Yes. Yeah, I really
liked it.
Just really quick, I liked the first episode of season 6.
Yeah.
I didn't like the second one too much, and I thought the third one was much better.
Yeah, I felt exactly the same. All right, there goes 3 podcasts right there in a row. Boom, boom, boom. All right, that is our show.
Thank you so much for listening.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.